Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Rhonda Furr is the professor of music and the university organist at Houston Baptist University. She's influenced countless lives during her 3 decades at HBU. One of her greatest accomplishments is helping the magnificent Smith Organ in Beelen Chapel become a reality. Welcome, Rhonda Furr.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
That is a beautiful organ in Beelen Chapel.
It is an incredible instrument.
I mean, I don't know about organs like you do, but that has to be one of the best.
Mm-hmm. And I was so fortunate. There are not a lot of organists that have the opportunity to help design an instrument, have a hand in the design of an organ. And so we were very fortunate here when Jim and Sherry Smith donated $1.5 million dollars for an instrument. And then we were able to design this instrument. I worked with a Canadian company, Laterno, out of Canada. And I also had an outside organ consultant. I didn't want it to only be the Rhonda Furr instrument with what I had in mind. I wanted to make sure that between the consultant from Laterno and then the outside consultant, we covered all the bases so that this instrument would be good not only for me as a teaching instrument and for worship and for weddings and all the other celebrations we have here in the chapel, but also for future organ professors. It seemed very important.
Now, tell me, how do you describe the organ? I mean, I know there's a mm-hmm. certain number of pipes, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What are the features of that particular organ?
It's a 3 keyboards, and we have 58 ranks of pipes, and that are controlled by what we call draw knobs or stops that you pull out, and that engages that particular rank of pipes. There's over 3,200 pipes there in the instrument.
3,200 pipes in the organ in Beelen Chapel? Mm-hmm.
You only see the facade that only has some of the pipes, but not only are there more pipes behind, but there are a couple rooms behind that have shutters on them so that when you see the organist pushing in, it looks like gas pedals. It's opening and closing those shutters, allowing the sound to become bigger or softer, as if you were in a closet and playing music, and then somebody opened that closet door, it would all of a sudden get louder. So you have those. We have what we call preset options, so that if I'm going to play a hymn, I don't want it to sound the same on every stanza, and the instrument's so large, I don't want to be pulling things by hand, so I can decide what kind of sounds I want for each of the different stanzas and set that, basically like in a computer, so that then when I'm ready to change from stanza 1 to stanza 2, I just push a button with my finger, or I can hit a toe stud and it'll change it as well.
Wow. How do you learn how to play an instrument like that?
Most organists start with piano. Yeah. And I know I started with piano, and then I started piano lessons when I was 7. And by the time, I guess, the first time I played for church, it was in a small rural church. I was probably 10. And by the time I was 12, I was playing not only for that church, but any church. They heard that this kid could play hymns. And so I became kind of the itinerant pianist around town. And then I think sometime when I was probably about 15, we moved, and there was a need for an organist. And so I did all the wrong things. I taught myself how to play. Oh, I could figure out this instrument. I taught, had all these bad habits. That fortunately, then when I went to college, I was a piano music education major, but I took organ as a secondary instrument and had to learn that. I learned that you play with both feet and you wear organ shoes. You don't do it, barefoot. And so I did my first 2 degrees with piano as my primary instrument, and then when I worked on my doctorate, I switched so that I could, you know, did the organ and musicology, which I teach both here.
Wow. So give us, I mean, what all do you teach here?
I teach, I'm very fortunate, you know, to get to teach what I do. It's just wonderful. I teach all of our sophomores an entire year of music literature. And these are music majors. All okay. of our music majors take, these are foundational courses, right? You have to know the tunes. You have to know the genres and the forms. And then I teach all of our juniors a year of music history. And so there we're delving into composer lives, the culture in which they were composing and how that impacted them and the different things from their lives. And then I also teach, right now I'm teaching a Bach senior seminar. So instead of our survey course where we maybe have 2 days on Bach during music history, we're spending the entire semester on Bach. It's a senior level course, and it's so exciting. The students are really, really excited. A lot of research for the class. And then I teach organ. And so right now I have 2 organ performance majors. One of them's a junior and one's a senior. The senior will be doing his recital pretty soon. And then I have secondary organ students. And these are students who are piano majors, but take organ as a secondary instrument, much like I did when I was an undergraduate. And so it's a very rewarding life. I drive to campus and I'm excited because, you know, we're going to do Mozart today, or we're going to do Beethoven today, or I get to teach Berlioz or Copland or Stravinsky. It's like, you know, sometimes I tell my students that I really hope that they end up in a career like I have, where they go to work and they're just so delighted to get to do what they're doing because they know they have a great impact on the lives of others. And how, you know, what a great gift to be able to give students to learn music at a depth where the appreciation is so much deeper than what you might have otherwise.
You know, it's interesting, but some people, after doing their job for 10 or 15, 20 years, they become so soiled and down. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed with you that you just always have exuded with such a great attitude. And you've been here so long. I mean, you probably could tell 100 stories. And how do you describe your tempo?
My tempo. That's good. I was thinking actually just a couple days ago. I'm in the middle of 6 different things and just thinking, I love this. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine not being immersed at this level. I think one of the things I love and one of the things that really energizes me is what we do here with students. We get students who come in, many of them from high school, where they didn't have, you know, self-discipline, they didn't mm-hmm. have any study skills. And obviously we get some that are highly ready for college. We get so many that are not. And we look at these students, and in 4 or 5 years, we have to help them be prepared to step into the professional world. And some of them have a long way to go. Right. And it's a challenge. But it is a wonderful challenge. In my classes, I think about, I'm using, music is one of the tools that I'm using to teach things much more than just what a sonata is and what a concerto is. I'm using music as a tool to help these students develop in all the different areas of their lives that will make them, help them be able to function in the professional world, in the adult world. When they take my classes, these are demanding classes, and they learn time management, or they don't make it. They, you know, have to retake the class and learn that time management. They learn study skills, and they learn that school is just the beginning. It's a lifetime of learning. And so I try to instill in them that desire to always go beyond in their study, beyond what's in the textbook, and beyond college. you realize you just scratched the surface, and it should be lifelong learning. I try to help teach them character skills, character, how important character is. And oftentimes during a class, I'll just, I'll stop and I have a little soapbox speech about something related to integrity or how important character is and how easy it is in college for the competence to grow a lot and a person's character not grow that much. Right. And it's so important that you're growing in both areas. And as a teacher, I feel that's one of my responsibilities, mm-hmm. is to help students grow not only in competence of the field that they've chosen to study, but in their character. I also feel, I talk with students in class, as we approach finals, we're talking about how important it is, all the way through to take care of yourself and take care of your health. Students get really stressed approaching a test. And, I'll talk to them about, some of the, it's not just academic learning. It's not just character. There's a physical aspect in terms of needing to take care of your body. Students don't sleep. Mm-hmm. They spend too much time on their devices.
Right.
And so the importance of getting exercise, but then also the spiritual, how important it is to set aside time every day to help develop the spiritual character of the person. So there's a lot to teach, and you have a limited amount of time. One of the advantages I have that a lot of teachers don't, and I really appreciate it, is I have this same group of students 2 solid years.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot.
You get to know them.
I get to know them. And if I see a student struggling or a student acts out of character, how they, maybe they're usually very talkative and they, they're quiet in class, I might just ask them after class, are you doing okay? What's going on? Or come see me. Let's just talk. And mm-hmm. so trying to have time and make time for those one-on-one conversations, whether it's, in the hallway or before class or after class, or let's make an appointment. I had something that was very, very, very touching to me is I had a recent occasion where I was actually practicing myself. I was practicing for, I think, maybe a choir concert or something in the chapel. And that's very valuable time because, you only have a limited amount of time. I heard the chapel door open, and I stopped. I turned around just to kind of see because it was getting dark, and it was one of my students. And he came in and said, I'm so sorry to bother you, but could I talk to you a minute? I'm like, yeah, because I had been asking him. I knew something was going on. And I said, yeah, because I was so pleased that he came, and I thought, this is important because he really hadn't opened up or shared with me what was going on. And I just sat down on the front, one of the front chairs there in the chapel. He's next to me. And he just opened up and poured his heart out. And I just listened. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I listened, asked a few questions. And it helped me respond to some late assignments that he had.
Yeah.
I just, and I said, you can turn this in late. I'll not, it was outside things that he had no control over.
Yeah.
And I said, don't worry about that if you need extra time on this and this. And then I was also able to say, I am not equipped to help you. You need some professional help,
mm-hmm.
and let me help you find. There's some counselors that come, and work with our students, and can I help make a connection with you? And I was so pleased because he said yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was so touching for me is that because of our relationship through the classes, he knew I was somebody he could come and talk to. Something completely.
And young people, they know who they can trust.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and I are both blessed and to have had really godly Christian parents. Mm-hmm. Now, I've lost mine. They've both passed on, but Christy's parents. And, you know, I just feel so sorry for so many of these young people today that they have no frame reference when you talk about a praying dad and a dad filled with wisdom that you can talk to. Because a lot of these young people don't have anyone they can talk to.
That's right.
And tragically, sometimes the paradigm of their dad or mom is not a really great paradigm.
That's right.
A teacher plays a very valuable role in a student's life, whether you're teaching music mm-hmm. or science or whatever. Mm-hmm. You obviously have accepted that challenge, but you've thrived in that. Mm-hmm. And how have you kept your attitude so good?
Well, it's what you see happening with the students. You can't help all of them, but you know you make a difference for so many. I teach, you know, I teach hard subjects. I teach hard subjects, and I am not an easy teacher. I have high expectations. I don't let them get away with, you know, with things. And so a lot of times the feedback I get is after they've graduated. And I get a lot of notes from students thanking me after they're graduated, whether it was thanking them from helping them learn how to write a research paper to, here's an example, something I do in my classes. I call them stress breaks, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll usually do maybe two or three a semester. And I can, I try to pick a time when I know that, you know, there's stress going on. For a good majority of the students. And so I talk to them, I'll say, especially this is how I approach the first one, that you come to college to major in music because you love music. You're passionate about music. And then you get here and we make you memorize stuff. We make you analyze it and look at the theoretical parts of it and pull it apart. And you have to, you have to do this and you have to do this and you just and it's easy to lose sight of why you decided to major in music to begin with. And I said, but you know, and I know, that music has this incredible power mm-hmm. to heal the soul.
It really does.
And I said, so what we're going to do is, I said, I'm going to turn off the light. I want you to close all your books. I don't want you looking at anything. Close your eyes. You can put your head down if you want to. And we're going to have a stress break. And I'd like you to think about your breathing. Breathe slow, breathe slow. And just allow this music to just kind of wash over you. And just remove this stress that you're feeling. And then I'll play one of these, gorgeous pieces of music. You know, it might be the Barber Adagio for strings, or the Beeble Ave Maria, or a Morten Lauridsen piece, O Magnum Mysterium. And we just sit there and we just are, you're just bathed in this music. And I mean, students, when I have an individual, in addition to our regular evaluation that the university does, I have one that's tailored for each of my classes that I give students. And a lot of how I teach, I've gotten ideas from students. But they'll always comment on those stress breaks. Mm. And I have graduates who write me back and say, I use stress breaks with my students. Or I have a student who, mm-hmm. he's a pastor of a church, and he was a youth pastor, and then he became a senior pastor. And he'll write me once every 5 years and say, want you to know I'm still doing stress breaks in small groups. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, I thought it worked great with young people, but he said, it works great with seniors. And I just used it with, this once, class that I was teaching. And so that really, it's those kinds of things when you feel like you've tried to, help students this and this. And, this particular student still didn't do well on a test or is kind of pushing back or whatever. But then when you step back, and you know you've made a difference in students' lives.
Yeah.
It's just, it's invigorating. You Absolutely. Can't help but be enthusiastic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree
going.
More, Rhonda. I just, you know, to change and mentor a young life and set it on fire and give them spiritual purpose, give them a spiritual anchor, it is of inestimable value. I want to transition for a minute and just say that the organ, you know, what is it about the organ? And maybe I'll date myself, okay? I don't know. I mean, I love all kinds of music, but when I, you know, I've been in Belen Chapel and on Fridays when they, you know, you've had the organ special times. Or really, I look at them as worship. It's what they were to me. But an organ just has a sense to spiritually just overcome you. Mm-hmm. And I grieve that the organ is like a fading thing in so many places where I go. You know, it's just, and I mean, I'm for everybody loving the Lord any way that helps them love the Lord. But I do love the solemnity and the elegance. Mm-hmm. And what is it about the organ?
The organ is an orchestra. The organ is an orchestra. The pipes that we have, in fact, they're even called by their orchestral names. We have string pipes, and you have flutes, and you have various reed pipes that make the sound of the trumpet or the tuba or the oboe. You have, you know, basic organ sounds. And so when you play the organ, it's like commanding this entire orchestra. Right there, from the really soft sounds to the mighty grand sounds. I mean, we have trumpets on our organ that just capture your attention. And so I agree that, you know, it's hard to describe in words. And what's really wonderful is for students who, you know, have played, you know, maybe they've played, you know, the piano and they've sung and they've got, you know, we'll start teaching them organ. And you can take the simplest piece, chords in one hand and a melody in the other hand, and pull out all of these sounds. And it's like, you are commanding this orchestra in front of you. The organ's been called the king of instruments, and it really does deserve that title.
And so how far does it go back? I mean, to show you my ignorance.
Third century BC was the first organ.
Really?
Yes, it was called a hydraulis. Okay, and it was because the water pressure was equalized. The pressure for the pipes and the air in the pipes was the pressure was regulated by water, okay? Ctesibius of Alexandria.
Really?
The first organ. And, of course, it was really crude and with just pipes.
Yeah.
It was very, very basic. And it was much later before, you know, the organ developed and eventually came into the church. By the time we get to the Renaissance, the organs are becoming much more sophisticated. And, you know, the interesting thing, a little quiz for you, all right?
Okay.
All right. In the Baroque, the two most complex machines, I'll say, or instruments known to humankind were the organ and what? Can you guess what the other, it's not a musical instrument, the organ and what else, say, in the 1600s would be the most complex? And any guess?
Bicycle.
Any guess?
Bicycle.
No, it's okay. The clock.
Really?
The clock
Are
and the organ
serious?
Were the two most complex devices known to humankind at that time. And it shows you just how complex the organ
Absolutely.
Was. And in the Baroque, I mean, Bach instruments that he played and the German Baroque instruments were just fabulous instruments. And so it's this, one of the things you were asking what I teach, I'm not teaching it this year, but I teach organ construction and design, where we look at the whole, you know, not only the whole history of the organ, but, you know, how to fix things that go wrong with the organ, you know, because you can't always be calling the organ technician to come in.
Right.
And organ literature, the two complete semesters of organ literature, where we go through, organ literature in the Renaissance and in the Baroque and in the different, you know, schools and types of organ, which gives us all the different sounds. The French classic music sounds completely different than the French Romantic. It's, you know, you've heard those big, you know, the big symphonies that we play on the organ, the Vidor Toccata or something, okay? That's from the French Symphonic School. So it is, but I completely agree that there's just something about the organ in worship that seems to just transcend words or anything else. I'm very mindful of the impact. I'm organist at First Presbyterian Church here in Houston, and I'm very mindful of the impact of music and the organ in worship, and how that can, I can play a hymn and, you know, have some sort of grand introduction that really helps people want to sing.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's holy, 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 or joyful, joyful, we adore thee. And then maybe on the second stanza, do a trumpet descant, you know, that's going on while they're singing. I might write a descant for the sopranos and tenors to sing and many of the hymns call for, between the third and the last stanza to kind of build it up. We'll put in an interlude and maybe change keys till you can just see, you know, in the congregation, people just kind of lifting up, ready for that last stanza.
Absolutely.
And that, so you've got the combination of a great hymn written by a great composer with text by a great author, and then sung by a wonderful congregation supported by a huge choir, and then this incredible organ. And it's been interesting. We see, you do hear that organ is on the decline, and you see a lot of worship services that have, they have services, many services. I mean, First Pres, even we have a contemporary worship service where they use a praise band.
Sure.
Other churches, maybe they don't have an organ, but do you know that organ builders are still backlogged in building instruments? In fact, when we wanted to have the instrument built here, I was told it would take them 3 years, and the Smiths were like, can they make that any shorter amount of time? Because every single pipe is handmade. Every single component is handmade. And so they did scoot it up, the design, the building of it, and it was so much fun. I wished you could have been here when they, Clay was here, when they brought the instrument in. They brought it down in 2 18-wheelers.
I believe it.
And we got people who were here on campus at the time, faculty, staff, students, to all come and unload the instrument, unload the organ, piece at a time. And Beelin, they put out wood across the benches, and those were covered with pipes. All around, standing in the, by those windows were all pipes, and Elliot McNair pipes were lining. They lined the aisle going down the side of Dunham. It was just incredible. And then to watch them over, a couple months' time, actually assembled, they had assembled the organ at their factory and then taken it apart. They brought it, and watching that instrument go up. We have videos here. You could, Clay was there
I'd
watching
like to see
it
that.
And did a videos for
oh,
us
how smart.
Watching that, go together over that time. It was really incredible. We've got an incredible gift here.
Yeah, and we do.
And we certainly are fortunate to have, the Smiths who are willing to do this. President to see the vision of it, and so it could happen.
And Rhonda Furr, you are a great gift to Houston Baptist University. Rhonda is the professor of music and the university organist, and she has influenced countless lives and 3 decades of service at Houston Baptist University. And you can learn more about the music program. Go to hbu.edu/music. You can call our admissions office, 281-649-3211, 281-649-3211. We'll keep that number on the screen so you can write it down. And remember, hbu.edu/music, there is so much. Find your home. at HBU. Learn how to excel and learn how to use the great tool that God has given us to express our love and our adoration for Him, music, in a way that would be pleasing to Him. Rhonda, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.